Skoliosehilfe, der Podcast für alle Skoliose-Betroffenen und ihre Familien. Von und mit Conny Pollack.
Welcome back to the Skoliose Hilfe podcast, which means Scoliosis Help podcast. And if you're just joining us, you might be wondering, why is this episode in English? Because typically everything I do is in my native language, which is German. But as I explained in the first part, when your guest doesn't share your native language, then you only got two choices. The first one would be to skip the interview, and the second one would be to switch simply to English. And I'm so glad that we chose the second option, because today we're continuing our conversation with Dr. Sabrina Donzelli. Dr. Donzelli is the president of SOSORT, which stands for the International Society on Scoliosis, Orthopedic and Rehabilitation Treatment, and is an expert who has devoted her career to scoliosis care around the world. So in the last episode, we left off with a key question, which was, what are the SOSORT guidelines and could they also help us as patients? So are they kind of relevant not only for the experts out there, but also for us patients as well? And in today's episode, we'll dive into the answer of this one and also explore the role of sports and therapy and tackle even more of your questions about scoliosis treatment. And stay tuned until the end, because I think there are very, very big surprises and twists for many of you in the last part of the interview. So don't miss that. Okay, let's jump right into it. So I just wanted to talk with you more about SOSORT, because you have described to us what it is and that it is mainly, of course, for expert in the scoliosis field. But there are also these SOSORT guidelines, and I think that could be also very important for the patients out there. So can you tell us, what are these SOSORT guidelines? Why are they important? And maybe help patients and experts alike.
Yeah. So the first biggest effort done by SOSORT since the foundation, and at the foundation, it was a small group of experts coming from mainly around Europe, but also including people from the United States. And they gathered together discussing, we want to improve conservative treatment for scoliosis patients. And the biggest effort done in really the first years of SOSORT was finding consensus. So finding agreement among the treatment options, treatment procedures related to bracing, exercises, everything. So this was really a big effort done by the founders, which really started the journey of SOSORT. Then the guidelines until now have been renewed twice. The last version is already quite old, because it was finished in 2016 and published in 2018. The changes in research are quite slow, so we don't need to renew it every year. It's not like technologies that are really evolving very fast. Research is still evolving quite slowly, but now we are starting again the process to update it. The reason why we publish it was that it's important for the specialists to have a guidance on the treatment. So as I told you, the most challenging part is balancing between under and over treatment. Because let's imagine we have a curve, we want to stop it to progress and improve it. So we can use the strongest treatment we have, let's say a cast 24 hours for forever, or I'm exaggerating, or brace treatment to anyone just to avoid progression. So it's not an easy treatment and has also a negative impact. So the best is balancing between the advantages provided by the treatment, but also the potential disadvantages created by the treatment itself. This is challenging. And as I told you, there are situations that are really in between, gray zone, where you can really do everything. So the guidelines are a big effort to help the clinicians in understanding when a choice can be a wrong one or when it can be considered a right one. So to have a guidance on treatment, but also for the patients to understand, because if they take 10 different consultations, they can end up with 10 different prescriptions. So it can be really helpful also for the patient, able to read English and able to read scientific papers. So there are some barriers in there. I'm aware of that, but it can be really helpful for them to understand if it's potential over-treatment or not. Because, of course, as a mother, if I receive a brace prescription for my daughter, I'm unhappy. But the goal of the treatment is very relevant, and the guidelines are highlighting what is the goal of this treatment. So if I have the most important goal, is ending growth with curves below 30 degrees, because this is what we can call the healthy threshold. Again, we are talking about Cobengo, but we need to keep in mind there is a measurement error, which could be 5 degrees more or less. So when we end the treatment around 30 to 40, 25 to 40 degrees, we are good. We are, the risk of progression in adulthood are very low or practically zero or 0 point something. So this is the most important goal to be reached with the treatment. Sometimes it's not possible, because sometimes scoliosis progress slowly. Sometimes scoliosis is really able not only to hide itself and reach diagnosis quite late, but also escaping treatment and being able to progress despite the perfect and best treatment ever. So in this very different situation, the self-resolving forms, and the very aggressive forms, there are all situations between. But the doctors, as well as the family, must be aware that we will understand what's going on and which type of scoliosis and where we are, if we are at the self-resolving extreme, in the middle, or in the progressing extreme, we will change the strategies along the path. So I think clinicians should be always honest on what is scoliosis. This is why I'm explaining it. And the guidelines also explain this, because for clinician without experience of scoliosis, yes, this is not so clear. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we just feel, okay, let's correct it. And sometimes we can just slow down the progression. So, you know, sometimes I hear something like, yes, the doctor told me that the brace is unable to correct. So that's false, because a good brace can correct the spine. But we start the journey here, and we will end it in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, at the end of growth. And alongside this path, many things will happen. So what I used to say to my patient, it's like we are in a river and we don't know if we will face rapids or it will be slow and calm all over the time. If we find rapids, we will progress. We will lose space. We will not be able to come back where we were when we started. We will arrive somewhere else. And we will have to adapt during the journey to avoid damages of this. So this is a journey. We start today. The guidelines can tell you in this situation it's good to do this. If you find it is not enough, you will have to increase there. So you have a range of options. An example could be time embrace. So we can, in a certain situation, we start part time, but if it's not enough, you can increase to full time. So there is the risk that we start 18 hours and we will need to go up to 23. Or we start with the softer brace and we will have to change the brace,
yes,
having a harder brace or increase the dosage. So the goals of treatment can change all over time. And if it's impossible to end the growth with a 30 carb degree curve or around that area, we can still work with a brace to avoid surgery. And the surgical threshold is 50 degrees. So we can end growth with a curve which is below the surgical threshold and which is exposed at lower risk of progression in adulthood, which is still a good result. We are never straightening the spine because sometimes there is this illusion, particularly from the patient or the parent. There's a curve. We need to straighten it.
Yes.
That's not the goal.
And it will go like this.
Yeah. And so it's important also to explain what are the goals of treatment, because we can have a totally normal life with a 25 carb degrees curve at the end of growth, and we can completely forget to have scoliosis in our life.
Yes. Right. And that's a thing I think many patients are and also parents are forgetting. They're like, okay, it's only a result, a good result when the spine is completely straight again. And only then everything will be perfectly fine. And that's clearly not the case. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So this is the reason why it's very important to work on guidelines, to find common goals of treatment, and to have an idea what is the available literature about, scientific literature supporting treatment. So which option are more supported by evidence, scientific evidence. So the guidelines are now starting a new update related to the scientific evidence which came out in the past 8 years in order to give a more updated overview of what is supported by evidence and what is still just supported by the expertise.
When will they be published?
Oh, no, they are starting. It's a long job. So we are now working on the team that will review systematically review the literature in every single field of scoliosis. So adult scoliosis, growing subjects of scoliosis and different treatment exercises, bracing. So
a lot to be done.
a lot. So the document is, the published document, the currently available one is about 45, I think it's more than 40 pages.
Mm-hmm.
So
it
it's
is,
quite
yes.
a long document. Which is reflecting, partially reflecting the long and hard work done by all the authors involved.
Yes. Wow. Wow. Okay. So it will take some time, but we are patiently waiting.
I expect at least a couple of years, at least.
Okay, so we have talked a lot about bracing, and also there is a lot of opinions about the process of wearing off a brace. So there are people that are just stop wearing it when the doctor tell them so, or they are really decreasing the bracing time over a long period of time, just to give the body the time to adapt. What is your opinion about this, I think, very important part in treatment?
Yes. So let's talk about brace discharge, brace discontinuation, also called brace weaning. This is one of the biggest gap in the literature. There is nothing published about this. Another big challenge, I think that it's related to the action of graces, because we don't know anything about the differences in biomechanical action of different graces that are used. So we have published papers showing some type of graces can reduce surgical outcomes, can increase the number of subjects reaching a perfect goal, so ending growth below 35 degrees, but we don't have any comparison between different braces, so we don't really know which differences that there could be between braces. Again, I feel I'm very lucky because I worked in this institution with a certain type of brace, and then I moved away and I've started working with a different group with a different type of brace. So it just gave me the opportunity to have a different point of view. So, and I discovered I feel there are many differences in the effect of the brace. So the brace I worked with, and I'm still working with, because the type of brace is essentially strongly connected to the expertise of the orthotist providing it. So despite I would love to have a different brace right now, but I don't have an expert orthotist working with me, so I cannot provide a new type of brace to my patients. And I don't want, because the orthotist I mostly work with is working very well. My would be a curiosity about the action that I explored in a different setting where I'm not visiting patients. So I'm just watching what's happening, but I cannot treat patient there because it's in the United States and I don't have license to work in the United States. So there are differences in the effect. This is my theory behind that. And so the difference in the effect will require different protocols and different treatment protocols, different management protocols. Let's imagine, I published a paper a couple of years ago showing that the first out-of-brace X-ray is predictive of the end of growth results. But this happened with the brace I was working with, and I'm not sure this could happen also with a different brace. Now, I'm sure this is different for another type of brace. And for the winning is the same. I think there are braces that can change the curve gradually over time. So like producing a gradual, slow correction, which can be in some ways much more stable. Sometimes braces can produce a strong correction in the beginning and then just keep it. This strong correction, which is what I experienced, is similar to the cost correction. So the maximum potential correction of the curve is obtained since the very beginning. And then the work done is to try to keep it as much as possible. And this is the reason why the protocol I used was a gradual reduction of time in brace all over time. In this way, it's like allowing the spine to keep the correction as much as possible. And this is also the reason why the X-rays protocol include an out-of-brace X-ray taken at the end of the real break. So I can see what the spine can do out of the brace as it happens in everyday life of the patients. And this was also giving me good guidance for the choices and how to gradually reduce the time in brace. In my experience, passing from a full time to night time abruptly can, in more flexible spines, because some patients are more flexible and some patients are less flexible, can produce a collapse. A collapse of the curve that really passed from the good correction obtained even worse and become even worse than it was before starting the treatment.
So that was the case when you're just abruptly going from all day bracing just to nighttime bracing in one day.
So that is not a typical situation, but in some patients this could happen, and so there's still a lot to be understood about that. But in more flexible patients, this could happen, and this is the reason why gradual weaning is strongly recommended. Then the interpretation of gradual can be in 3 months, you can remove the brace, because if you imagine you are treating like a fracture, then in 3 months you can totally discharge the brace gradually. In my experience, it takes some years. And generally, at least 1 year and a half to pass from a full time to nighttime and then remove it, even 2 years sometimes. It depends also on the time prescription of the beginning, because if you start 20 hours a day, then you have to keep it for, let's say, until the growth is slowing down, and then you can start part-time, which is 18 hours, and then go down. If you start 23, you reduce the time every time you see the patient, and you generally reach 18 hours when the growth is ending. So you then have to ask yourself, should I win or not? Because you are gradually, automatically reaching that moment where you can go down. So this is also the reason why weaning is a big question, because in settings where it's impossible to make the patient wearing the brace 23 hours, and you start 20, then you have to keep 20 until they reach this end of growth, which means exiting the risk period. So it's harder because you don't know it also how the spine will react to reduction. If you start higher, you see over time how the spine is reacting to the reduction of time. And so you can slightly slow down. For example, let's imagine, I give you an example. I have a patient wearing the brace 21 hours. So taking an X-ray after 3 hours, I move to 20. And when I see the patient, I see a strong collapse of the curve. And so I decide, rather than slowing to from 20 to 18, I will go 19 and then 18. So I'm gradually weaning according to what I saw in the patient. I could encourage the patient doing more exercises to support the trunk and then move forward. So in that kind of protocol, you are also flexible in the decisions. In other type of protocols, if you are 20, it's harder to try. So you can try and then go back, but
that's kind of very disappointing also for the patient. Yeah,
exactly, because the gradual reduction is a rewarding system for the patient, keeping up a good motivation. So yes, they start 23, but they know, because I already told them, that when they will come back, they will have 2 hours rather than one. So I will go down to 22. And then I tell them next time 20, you know, so that's a rewarding system. And in fact, with the research we did using the temperature sensor to check the objective measure of compliance, what we found was that the patients with a 23 hours prescription are better compliers and they remain better compliers all over time.
Okay. This
for two reasons. First, for this rewarding system, which is positively motivating them. Because when you start 20 and you have not enough result and you have to increase to 23, it's very hard for you as a doctor, as well as for the patient to comply. Yes. It's a failure for them.
Yes.
So very hard to accept it. Well, if you reduce, they are always happy. The second reason is generally that when I prescribe 23 hours of grace, we have a very high level goal. So I motivate them a lot. They have no milder curves. Generally, they have very severe curve and higher risk. So it's easier for them to understand the reason why we need to treat them with a full-time brace. Mm-hmm. And so they want to fight against scoliosis because they are willing to obtain the maximum goal. They are worried about their situation. They are aware of the risk. And it's definitely easier to accept the treatment. That's like, you know, and it's also an easier treatment to understand. Okay, wear it, just take a shower, 1 hour of break per day, and then you have to keep it. So there are no misunderstandings there. The message is very clear. This is the reason why generally they are better compliers. Mm-hmm. There are these factors related to this.
Very, very interesting. Okay, well, thank you very much for the insight, also for how you reduced the bracing time in a real example.
I'm not sure this can be applied in every setting,
of course.
Because as I told you, there could be many differences. I've seen a setting with very good results using the brace, mainly with an average dosage around 20-21 hours. I feel there are some challenges, but it's still possible to start 20. But the patient must be aware that they will keep 20 hours until the risk become lower.
I want to ask you one question about therapy and sports, because we have discussed it also in back in October. Yeah. So what is for you the difference between therapy and sports? Are there differences?
So again, I think one of the common situation in scoliosis is there's sometimes it happens there's an attempt to simplify it too much. So in this attempt to simplify, there was this misunderstanding or wrong message that there could be good sports and bad sports. Mm-hmm. The strategy was, okay, let's use sport as a therapy. And let's define which sports are good and which are bad. And this created this strong trend towards swimming, because
yes.
It's a complete, we say in Italian, it's a complete physical activity because you train everything. But it's in the water, it's not against gravity, and scoliosis is strongly affected by gravity.
Yes.
So I would discuss a lot about this theory, but this became very strong and it's very hard to stop this concept, which is in the mind of everyone all around the world. So that's crazy. Scoliosis is complex. It's not easy. And so the treatment should reflect the complexity of scoliosis. So using sport as a treatment is a simplification that totally mismatch with the complexity of scoliosis. We are talking about growing subjects. Physical activity is essential activity for growing subjects, for health, for good growth, for keeping good coordination and movement independently on the pathology they have.
Mm-hmm.
So physical activity must always be strongly encouraged in every subject, particularly in growing subjects. If we think about scoliosis patients, we need to grow up future motivated athletes, leisure athletes. We do not need competitive athletes, but we need to, because let's say scoliosis is like creating a disadvantageous lever. So we need stronger muscles to compensate this alteration. And therefore, for health, it's good to become good, consistent leisure athletes. For scoliosis patients, this is much more essential. So my recommendation is they choose what they like and they keep it up as long as they can, even in adulthood, even changing type of activity all over time. There is no right or wrong. Every single sport has pros and cons. It's not a treatment. I would consider the whole effect of sports, including psychosocial influence, which is particularly important for adolescents in general. And so there is a strong recommendation towards sports to all my patients. Sometimes brace can be a barrier to sport activity because the trunk cannot move within a brace. But if we imagine a patient needing to wear a brace like a cast, so 23 hours, 24 hours per day, just taking the shower, this will happen for some months, 4 to 6 months, not for years. So they can adapt to the to the physical activity with the brace on, or just removing for 1 hour and then get it back on for a few months to allow the treatment to do what the treatment has to do. But otherwise, I always encourage whatever sports they like. And this should be associated to treatment, because let's imagine the competitive athletes, because in adolescence, there's a strong passion for sports sometimes, and they become competitive, training themselves every day. And that's such another amazing life school, growing to allow good growth, even mental growth, and become strong adults. So it's really important to encourage them if they have a passion and they can pursue their passion. Let's imagine we have a talented boy or girl with a potential future career in a certain sport. The only way they have to be successful in their athlete's career is to treat the pathology while they continue training.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's important, because postponing treatment because now I have the career can be really the choice that will prevent them to become successful athletes. So the best strategy is if I have let's imagine a 13 years old girl with talent in gymnastics, my suggestion could be, let's slow down a little bit with the activity right now to treat scoliosis, and then you will go back to your passion and you will succeed and you will be amazing athlete. Like it happens if they have an injury. Mm. They have to slow down and stop for a certain time and then go back, retrain themselves, recover, and get back to the highest level. So it's exactly the same. In this case, it's not an injury. It's something that's happening right now. Mm-hmm. But postponing it, like saying, not now, now I have other goals, sometimes is really the worst strategy, because sometimes scoliosis can worsen at the point that they cannot do it anymore. And that's a big pity. They are losing the passion. That's the worst scenario.
Yes.
So, well, this could be even with musicians, you know, very talented musician could have some problems in training, in playing because of a brace. But it's important for a few months to slow down a little bit. You have then a longer career after solving or starting solving the problem. Of course, scoliosis will not heal in a few months, but the most important part of the treatment is the beginning. Then we need just to keep the results. So it's important. I always listen about the passion of the patients, and I try to find the best strategy to treat and keep the passion. And I think that's the best way to manage this situation, independently if they are talented or not, or they are just passionate. It's always important to make them able to keep up the passion they have as long as possible. Mm-hmm. And it's good for their future life too.
Yes. Wow. Sabrina, thank you so, so much for your insights into your world as a scoliosis expert. And thank you also for your time. We are way over it. So thanks for that. I have one last question for you. Are there some recent studies on scoliosis that you find the most promising one?
That's very hard. I think there are some interesting attempts to predict the most aggressive forms, but they are just initial attempts. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the most promising field, including also genetics and epigenetics. Genetic research was unable to find something really useful because scoliosis is also complex in the number of genes involved and how they express themselves. So scoliosis is really complex. It's not like one gene involved with alterations. It's much more complex than that. But the current technologies and innovation are trying to find a way to include different factors influencing genetics. This is called epigenetics, probably in 20 years, we will have something. I think that's a prediction. So using big data to predict. Probably also epigenetics, trying to find something with blood sample. The most promising field in scoliosis in order to detect and determine at the first evaluation who will be the patient exposed to higher risk of progression with the more aggressive forms. That's probably the most promising part of research.
Okay. Sabrina, thank you so much again for your time. I really appreciate that. And thanks for this really, really great interview, full of insights, and I think everyone who's listening right now is taking some parts of the interview and have new insights now. So thanks for that.
No, it was absolutely a pleasure to be here, and I want to tell you that I really love and understand the passion you put into this.
Thank you.
Yeah, I congratulate with you because I know it's a big effort done, but I think it's important, and so this is why I'm here and proud to be here with you.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate that.